seen him negotiate deals, many deals over the years. I don't think anyone more important, at least contract-wise, to the City of Calgary and the Flames fans than the one that was announced yesterday. And I'm joined by Rich Winter. Talk a little bit about it. How you doing, Rich?
I'm off. Really doing well, Bruce. You?
Well, you have to live in Edmonton, but otherwise you're okay, right?
Oh, but I live on the River Valley. It's beautiful. I watch canoes come by every way, and I think to myself, how brown it is in Calgary.
It isn't brown this year, actually.
This year, I was there. Brown. My daughter moved there, and I've been there quite a bit because of that. And it's beautiful this year. Really nice.
How green is our valley? All right. Try to give me the two-sentence story about this contract. What it was like from you and Gio's point of view.
You mean getting Brad to call us back on time or the meat and potatoes?
Well, you've already told us one thing. Are you telling us?
I hope he's listening, actually. Brad's a really good guy. I think it was just a lot of struggle around term. I mean, it became an interesting dynamic as the Canadian dollar kept falling, and it really changed the whole, really a lot of the dynamics around the negotiations. I think July 1st had a little bit of an impact as we saw older players really not getting the term that they used to. And I think it's created a growing concern with older players that, you look around at some of these other teams with these contracts going into 39, 40 and beyond. I think teams are starting to get increasingly nervous because the cap's not doing what they expected it to, or it doesn't look like it will. So it doesn't look like there's going to be any room for errors in judgment. And so those dynamics just made it interesting and different and difficult. I think the term was really challenging for the Flames to get to where we ended up. Gio didn't want to push much beyond that because just by his nature, he would never want to be in a situation where he was being paid to do something he was no longer capable of. So he was quite content with 6 years, even though other players may have pushed for a little longer. So it took them a while to get there. And then there was the normal tugging back and forth on the numbers. But we got that managed at least over time. Which was the biggest one?
You mentioned the July 1st and some of the veteran contracts. What were a couple of those ones that raised the red flag for you?
Well, I don't think it was a particular one. Just the fact that this just was no term out there this year, So it was really just an overwhelming feeling. And I talked to a couple of other agents over the course of this negotiation, and they found that to be a tough struggle. J.P. Barrie was talking about the Sedin's deals in Vancouver, and so I talked with JP and some other people, and term is the battlefield now, and I think rightly so, because you've got to be very careful in this sort of cap world, especially now that it's leveling off. You can't have two 38-year-old players underperforming and making big money or having large cap hits.
Yeah, I think people feel when they hear about negotiations, they think it's just you and the player talking to the organization, but both sides are canvassing the whole industry and talking to people in the industry as this is going on, and sometimes talking to people in the financial industry as well, I presume, to predict where you think the dollars are going.
Well, I think sometimes it's just by osmosis. I ran into JP at the, at the Hockey Canada tryouts. It just happened. You talk to people, and so it's not, seek out a little bit. But yeah, you're just trying to figure it out. I mean, the Canadian dollar is one. It's a lot of people, we're looking at China and looking at China's decreased demand and how that affects our economy and making at least some educated guesses on how that might affect Gio. But, as the dollar dropped, the compensation to Gio in Canadian dollars was growing. So that also had an impact in his decision. Ultimately,
explain what that meant. What you meant there, Rich?
Well, see, because when we started negotiation, $6.5 million or $7 million U.S. was about 7 million Canadian, a little bit more. When we finished negotiating, $6.75 million U.S. was close to 9 million Canadian. So it had a huge impact. I mean, he is Canadian. He has no plans to live outside Canada. So without any assistance from the Flames, compensation continued to rise in Canadian dollars incredibly over the course of this negotiation. So that had an impact on the ultimate number, because 6.75 wasn't the 6.75 we were talking about when we first started.
You have handled many players over the years. I've known a bunch of your clients, guys, different types, different personalities. Tell me what was unique about working with Gio.
Well, he's a smart guy, and he really understands what he wants. We do goal setting with our players, and a lot of people I don't know if a lot of agents do it to the detail that we do it, but I really talk a lot to the players about where do you want to live, what are your concerns about taxes, family, team, your role in the team, your relationship with the organization. And so I think as we went through this, Gio had a really firm commitment to the Calgary Flames that was really buoyed up in a deep understanding of what was important to him. So he went into this negotiation knowing that it was going to be very difficult for another team to beat the Calgary Flames in a negotiation. Sure, could he have got more money? Brad mentioned that in some of his interviews yesterday, and that ended up in newspapers, you know, that, yeah, Gio could have got a lot more, probably. But where? Not from a team that he's the captain of. I mean, he was really close to, he really wanted to lead this team. He's really feeling they're at the, you know, at the crossroads of something special. And, you know, Gio wanted to be in Calgary. He wanted to be their leader. And I think what was really different, money is, it was important as part of this negotiation, but Gio was so concerned about how this would affect his team and their competitiveness. He is the captain of the Calgary Flames, and he wears that C with a great deal of pride and a great deal of responsibility. And that's not the norm anymore. You know, guys get to be 34 and they just exit and go somewhere else, or 33. Or Gio really wanted to be here, and it was sincere, and it weighed in on every single day of these negotiations. But I want to be here. And, of course, we didn't tell them that much, but that often, but it really was different. It was just his loyalty to an organization that he'd grown up in was unique.
Talking with Rich Winter, who was the agent for Mark Giordano in these negotiations. You're still working with Claude Lemieux, right?
Yes.
Okay. Handled lots of players, as I say. I've known him going back to the 1980s, I guess. Late 80s, early 90s.
Oh, no, that couldn't be true. I think I was in elementary school then.
No, well, you were a boy prodigy. That is true. I was quite amazed that an 11-year-old child was handling players' contract negotiations at the time. But, yes, you are a young guy.
Yeah. Al Burton, growing up in Drumheller. It's the way we all are.
What makes the Flames different to negotiate with? Or unique, I should say, not different. Well, what's unique about negotiating with the Calgary Flames?
That unique, but I do think that, you know, Brad brings a, you know, he brings a much broader perspective. He's got a plan. I don't know every single aspect of it. Much of it he shares with me, but he has a very clear vision, and he's, you know, he isn't about to deviate from it. I don't always agree with him, obviously, but he has a job to do that's different than mine, and I think the Flames organization has become very professional with Brian there, with his experience, and Brad. I mean, that's one of the more talented hockey operations in the business. I mean, Brad grew up in the Central Hockey League, which he had an ownership interest in. He's built arenas. He's overseen teams. He's overseen multiple teams. You know, he's been in a very difficult situation in Phoenix trying to build a team and manage a payroll. So he brings a lot of experience to the table, and of course Brian's experience really speaks for itself. So the combination is, you know, it's just refreshing. I'd rather deal with a group that is that clear on where they're headed. They're not wandering here and there and wishy-washy, and I've even seen it in some of the entry-level contracts that we've negotiated in the last year. They're just very consistent on the way that they operate, which is helpful, because, you know, if you're consistent in entry level, you don't get embarrassed by your third round pick getting less than the fourth round pick. And they've really worked hard to bring a level of professionalism that is not unique. I mean, there's a lot of teams, Chicago and Detroit, and a lot of them have run very professionally now. But the level of professionalism over the course of the last couple, 3 years has advanced considerably.
It's interesting you mention that, because Rob Kerr and I talk all the time. I said years ago when we finally got the salary cap, I said, look, teams that make a ton of money are going to have money left over, and they're going to start spending it in other places. And one of the places I thought they would do this is in management and in training, et cetera. And one of the templates we're seeing now, Rich, is, and you just talked about it with the Flames, we're not just seeing one GM. We're almost seeing a college of people in an organization, a brain trust. Yeah, the GM's there, but there's a president, then there's advisors, et cetera. We're seeing this in place after place after place. Again, how is that changing your business? Because you're still kind of operating just you and the player, right?
Well, no, we have a team of people that we rely on for financial management and some other things. But I think what's interesting, I mean, I think where it hit me, though, you know, Chicago was really the first organization to do this as broadly and effectively as it's now starting to be emulated by other teams. But I remember when Marian Hossa first signed there, he had a bad shoulder. you know, after signing a 12-year deal. They were aware of it.
Your client.
Yeah, my client, Marion Hossein. So we sat in a meeting around their convention where 12 people were in the meeting in a suite at the hotel room where the convention was held. And I just thought, it just hit me as fascinating that they had two doctors, they had the president, they had the GM, two assistant GMs. And as a group, they're making less mistakes than they would otherwise. There's a lot more, the old Chicago Blackhawks was Bob Pulford and Cindy the secretary. And I think they're running more like a corporation. They're less prone to make mistakes. They're less prone to responding emotionally. It's really been interesting. I find it refreshing because I think capable groups of people are easier to deal with.
Yeah.
Because they're more consistent. They understand the arguments you're making. And you get to closure more quickly.
Is this going to make it more difficult for teams that operate on a lower budget that aren't cap teams that maybe can't afford to do this sort of stuff? Are we going to start seeing the better heel teams having an advantage this way?
Well, I think it's going to be huge because it's really difficult for these teams to compete. I mean, we've seen, at the combine, we've seen teams, low budget teams, I won't name them in particular to pick on them, but would send one scout to the combine. That can't be an advantage.
Yeah.
So it's going to be challenging. And I think the cap, a lot of people, it's not just in this area, Bruce, because there is a huge competitive advantage certain cities have over others. I mean, whether people in would like it or not, Chicago, Los Angeles, New York, those are attractive destinations as compared to some other cities. And I would even, mine included, where I live and Calgary probably, where I've also lived. I mean, I don't think if you're a young 24, 25-year-old young man or 27-year-old unrestricted free agent, you're going to be attracted, you and your wife are going to be attracted to Calgary and Edmonton as easily as you're going to be attracted to a Chicago or Los Angeles.
Right. Talking with Rich Winter, the agent for Mark Giordano, agent for a lot of well-known hockey players. Let's get back to where we started off in terms of how the market has changed. You made a point there about the Flames having the advantage with the difference in the Canadian dollar. Now, who knows? Currencies go up and go down, but typically I don't see this changing much for 2 years. Do we see Canadian teams having an advantage here to be signing guys at a dollar figure that's lower in American but still gives them a really nice take-home in Canada?
Well, I think it depends on the player. Gio is Canadian, plans to live in Canada, so I think it's a huge advantage. Would it be an advantage for, if you're negotiating with Phil Kessel or, Patrick Kane or one of these un-Americans? Probably not. But I think it does give you an advantage. You just can't help but realize what you're getting in local currency where you're planning to live.
Yeah. Plus, I think and we've talked about this before, too. Alberta still, has some drawbacks, perhaps, but the tax structure here is very good for athletes, isn't it?
Yeah, it's attractive. And I do think there's different types of players. Like, a lot of players pine for the opportunity to play in an environment where, I remember when Peter Sikora came here having played in New Jersey and won two cups and then played in Anaheim and went to the finals. But when he came to Edmonton, he said he couldn't tell you the number of times he's gassing up and someone's going, "Hey, Pete, good luck tonight." And so there are people players that really enjoy being in our environment where hockey is really at the heart of almost everything we do from a sports and entertainment perspective. So, yeah, I don't think we're as challenged as people think, but we're challenged. Certain players don't like the limelight, and I think the Montreals, the Calgarys, the Edmontons, the Canadian teams are not as attractive to those teams. I don't think it's as much the weather and things that people would traditionally think. It's just some people don't like the limelight. They like to go to work and they like to go to the beach.
So as I said, when we were just getting on the phone, I was just making the remarks that, of course, as soon as Gio's contract was made, everyone started to talk about Sean Monahan, what's going to happen, et cetera. We're heading into a new climate, as you just described. Give us your sort of, back of the envelope notes on what you see going forward now. What are we looking at the next 18 months to 2 years that might influence you going shorter term or longer term or whatever? Just give us your sort of back of the envelope assessment of where the market is going to go.
Well, I just think, it's really hard to pinpoint generalities, but I think outside of, you're going to struggle to get term with older players. I think you're going to want to go shorter term. I mean, I don't think this economy can be in the toilet for a long time, but, we're hearing things from, from Alberta's perspective with the reduced cost of solar energy coming on board and the lack of demand in places like China. I mean, it's going to be tough for a long time. So I think, you know, you're going to see a lot of struggle. A lot of agents are going to want to get those long-term deals that they have been getting for the younger players. They're not coming. I think you're going to have to make real educated decisions on what you have as a player. And if you have a rising asset like a Johnny Gaudreau or Sean Monahan or Freddie Anderson or Hampus Lindholm, who I represent in Anaheim, you're going to have to be real careful to lock in for too long, because what you're going to lock in for is it's going to be a lot tougher.
Yeah.
To get the numbers that they have been getting, and that adjustment's going to be hard for young players to accept, because they're going to look at a guy. I talked to Stan Bowman about this a couple days ago, and about the 10.5 he's got tied up in Kane and Taze. But he said, Rich, you have to look at what the environment was when we signed those deals. Those guys thought they were 12 or 13. We just signed that big television contract in Canada where projections were the cap was going to 80. So they were making decisions at that time with a different set of expectations. And so what young players are going to face now is they're not going to get those deals, and there's going to be a sense of envy and jealousy in some cases. And it's going to take some time for people to accept that there's going to be a correction in the market, and won't be necessarily the case with the really good young players. But it's going to be tough on all of us, because we're not going to get the deals in some cases that guys got last year.
As always, Rich, a fount of information, lots of great stuff in there for the fans to digest, and because we all have to be economists now going forward. If we're fans of a team, we got to understand where it's going. Lots of good stuff in there for us. I appreciate you taking the time today, and hopefully you'll come down to Calgary. Hey, maybe we'll do a book together.
I would love to do that, Bruce. You know how much affection I have for you. I've known for you for a long time, and I'm glad you're close to home rather than in Toronto. It's good that you're out here, and we'll see you soon, I hope.
Anytime. Come on down. Thanks very much, Rich.
Thanks, Bruce.